This talk is called Life, the Universe and Everything, Secondary Students' Beliefs, Knowledge and Understanding of Scientific Ideas Represented in Curriculum and Culture. And I'd like to acknowledge the fact that this talk draws upon data from the LASER project, Learning About Science and Religion, which is directed by Professor Barry Billingsley at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. This is part of a programme of research which has been going on for a number of years across many countries, looking at aspects of students' learning and thinking in science, often focused in particular upon their misconceptions and their learning difficulties. We've learned a great deal about this, but we've found it's actually a very complex area where often we're dealing with rather sophisticated and rather subtle effects. Sometimes this work is described as a constructivist research programme, and the constructivist research programme has a number of premises, including these particular points, that learning science is an active process of constructing personal knowledge, that learners come to science learning with existing ideas about many natural phenomena, that the learners' existing ideas have consequences for their learning of science, and that in principle, it's possible to teach science more effectively if account is taken of the learners' existing ideas. This diagram very simply represents that our foci often are teaching and learning, and that we understand learning to be related to the thinking that students are doing, both that the process of learning can change the thinking of students, but also that the thinking they do actually influences the learning that goes on. We talk about students' ideas and sometimes their conceptions or misconceptions, alternative conceptions, mental models and many other terms. We have to bear in mind that these things are not all of a kind. Sometimes students' conceptions may be very well established in their thinking, but not always. The ideas students have are sometimes informed by implicit knowledge elements cognitive resources are not even aware of having. Their conceptions may be discrete or linked into more extensive conceptual frameworks. Sometimes their ideas may be considered to be beliefs, things they're strongly committed to, but often that isn't the case. And often students have more than one way of looking at a particular topic area or scientific concept. And the language we use to describe this research is sometimes very imprecise. So this is just a quote from a book I was reading where it tells us that Sister Gertrude Hennessy was the sole science teacher for grades 1 through 7 in a small parochial school in Wisconsin. It says she pursued a structured approach to science instruction that made students' thinking visible and therefore accessible to her observation. Without in any sense wishing to undermine Sister Gertrude Hennessy's work, I suggest that actually student thinking is never visible and is never something we can directly observe. We always have to infer it through their behaviour. So though we're primarily interested in learning and how teaching affects learning and that in turn affects thinking, in practice we're always dealing with the observables. Students' utterances, their gestures, the inscriptions they make when they write for us, things like that. From these, we indirectly infer aspects of their thinking and the learning that's going on. We commonly talk about students' perceptions, their memory, their ideas, their understanding, their thinking. All of these things are actually very complex, not always very well understood, and are all things that we can't directly observe. In the LASER project, we're particularly interested in children's learning about science and religion. Two different areas of culture, of society, in the English system, two different areas of the curriculum, but things that are actually often related in society. We found that children have a range of ideas about how science and religion might link, which to some extent, but not completely, reflect those that are found in intellectual argument. We also were aware, and one of the reasons we started looking at this area, is that although intellectually there are many different academic arguments about how science and religion may or may not relate, there's a very popular idea put around by some scientists in the media that science necessarily excludes religion, excludes the possibility of God, and that science is actually an atheistic project. Although some scientists subscribe to this view, it's certainly not the common view of all scientists. This misrepresents the diversity of views among scientists and ignores many religious scientists, some of whom have been very, very significant for the history of science. if we're not careful, if children adopt this atheistic framework or believe this atheistic framework, they may come to feel that when they learn in school, they have to choose between science and religion. And we would like to suggest that that's not necessarily the case. In our work, we started off with an interview study of 13 to 14-year-old children in school, and we found that when we asked them about their views, they had a range of stances to science and religion, some giving religion precedence over science, some being open to science supporting their faith, some compartmentalising science and religion so they didn't think about the two together, some adopting multiple frameworks for how these fitted together, sometimes thinking in terms of the scientific arguments, sometimes in terms of religious beliefs, and some actually chose science over religion and saw that in choosing science they had to exclude religion as a possibility. Also in our early work, we asked children a number of questions on the survey. One of the items was that the scientific view is that God does not exist. And we found that actually only a minority of the children we talked to, asked on the survey, would say that that was not the case. So many of them did accept the idea that scientifically, God does not exist. Of course, science in general does not take a view on the existence of God, only excludes gods or hypotheses in scientific explanations. The present study we're talking about today looks particularly at two scientific ideas of origins. The Big Bang theory for the origin of the universe and evolution by natural selection as the origin of the diversity of life on Earth. Both of these ideas are very major areas of scientific thinking, very influential scientific ideas, but they're also ideas that are very commonly discussed in popular culture. They're also ideas where some religious communities believe that the scientific ideas are actually contrary to their religious beliefs. We asked children a number of questions in interviews where we were looking at their knowledge and understanding of these ideas, their understanding of the scientific evidence for these ideas, their views on the status of a scientific idea, and actually the students' own beliefs or thoughts about these two areas. In this particular study, the participants ranged in age from 11 to 18-year-old. They were interviewed from a number of different English schools, and the data was collected by semi-structured interviews that were undertaken in the schools. Where possible, we interviewed students over 2 or 3 years, although that wasn't always possible. And so I'm talking today from data that's been analysed from 28 of the students, which is not yet the full data set we collected. Starting with the ideas about the Big Bang and looking at students' knowledge and understanding, we found a whole range of things that children told us. So Freddie, year 11 being 15 to 16-year-old, says the matter, the big explosion, perhaps out in space, which then, you know, caused like nuclear actions and things like that. And one very common idea was the idea that the Big Bang happened out in pre-existing space. Ivy in year 10 said, I'd like to explain the Big Bang theory. I guess explain how the stars came to be, and then I guess how a meteor hit the Earth and everything. And we found many of the students didn't specifically think about the Big Bang as being separate from the evolution of the whole history of the universe. Dennis in year 12 says, one major theory, the Big Bang theory, where everything started off from sort of a minute particle and it expanded and is still expanding, something that scientifically seems fairly reasonable. Edward in year 8 said it was a random explosion of matter and antimatter, and that's how the universe was formed. Apparently, considering that matter and antimatter pre-existed to explode, something that was quite common. Jill in year 8 says the Big Bang theory was like due to a kind of stuff. I think something like, is it a comet or a star imploded? And that created a mass of carbon, and then the carbon formed the Earth. And the hydrogen and the carbon joined to create the single-celled organisms and stuff. And then they evolved into us. Yeah, I think so. It exploded or imploded, I'm not sure. And this represents what we found with a lot of students, vague ideas, perhaps tying into some gist of what the Big Bang was about, but mixed up with other ideas about the evolution, not only of the universe, but of life itself. Iris said it's the Big Bang, and then from there it's gravity, or something rotating around, and evolutions, and we're coming from monkeys, and getting a bit more intelligent, and becoming humans, and having dinosaurs at the beginning, which are evolving. Well, I think I see the Big Bang as one thing, because that's why the planet is near the sun, and that's why it's a perfect ball you must live in. And I think evolution is attached to that. So I sense that they're confusing a number of different scientific ideas When asked about the evidence for the Big Bang, we found most students didn't have an awful lot they could tell us. Damien says, well, the Big Bang is logical, because it could have happened. When there was a Big Bang and then all the galaxies moved apart, that seems logical. So taking something as feeling feasible as being evidence. Amon talked about one of the major flaws. He said, I didn't know if we knew this, but the second law of thermodynamics says that once you've got all energy, it will eventually turn into an energy that you can't use. And Amon saw that as a flaw in the Big Bang model. Jackie talked about people who study history, and maybe they could try and investigate how the world was created. And Donald said it's very unclear, because back then, at the time of the Big Bang, there were very few records taken of like events and things. So it's all done on speculation as to where it came from. The idea that because no one was around at the time of the Big Bang, we can't have any clear evidence about it. Joy talked about a lot of it to do with atoms and things like that. But they put together like electrons and all that. They tried to recreate the Big Bang and prove it. I just know there was something like a big thing about the world ending or something, referring to news stories about experiments at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which are often reported as trying to recreate the Big Bang and possibly leading to the end of the world. Ianthi talks about redshift, which proves it happens, proves it. And so it's like cosmic microwave radiation. And there's a lot of scientific evidence proving that like it happened, because of various atoms colliding with each other and things like that. So here we have some reference to some genuine areas of scientific evidence, but still talking about the Big Bang in terms of atoms colliding with each other. We found most of the students had heard of the Big Bang, and they knew it was a theory about the origin of the universe. A few of them knew some alternative ideas like the steady state theory or cyclic universes, but that was much rarer. Generally, the students gave us very few details about the Big Bang as a scientific idea. Often they talked in terms of explosion, of pre-existing matter, or particles that collided. And they often explained the origin of the Earth as being within existing space, perhaps confusing stories about how the Earth came to be in the solar system with stories about how the universe came to be. And their understanding of scientific evidence can at best be described as being hazy. Sometimes they took the Big Bang theory to be the story of the whole evolution of the cosmos. When we asked them about the status of the Big Bang, Edward said it could have been caused by a god or it could have been caused by a man in the cloud, but it definitely was a big explosion because they found proof. Similarly, Finn talked about proof. Apparently scientists have discovered proof that somewhere, sometime, like in the universe, there was a big explosion, and that's how it happened. Obviously, we have proof for it. Interestingly, it happened somewhere in the universe, where obviously the Big Bang is an account of how the universe came to be. Iris says she would find it really upsetting if she found out everything she'd been taught about in science, like the Big Bang and everything, had just been found out to be all wrong. She'd be upset because she'd think, well, this is what they're trying to say to me. Surely science has facts to back it up. So the idea is that science should be teaching something that's factual, and it wouldn't be appropriate to find out that it was teaching theories that were then proved not to be true. Ianthi says she thinks it's pretty certain, but it is to the theory, so it could be proved wrong. Ivy says no one knows how the universe like officially started, and that's nice because nobody can really prove what happened. And it's nice to think about what could have happened, to have lots of theories, like the Big Bang theory. That was quite an unusual idea. Damien talked about scientists having tried to prove there's a Big Bang, but that they haven't really got much evidence, and he hasn't heard of much evidence, and he says, I know that they've gone like back and tried to do some experiments, but that's it really. Not sure what else scientists would try and do. Dennis says it's very hard to know, of course, but I mean, they're trying with a Large Hadron Collider. They're trying to simulate the Big Bang. I mean, it's probably never possible to know for certain. And Irma says there is sort of research along the timeline of our research, but I don't think you can be really sure because you never know. So some students consider the Big Bang to be proven. Others consider the theory and more tentative. And a few students could talk convincingly of the evidential basis for their evaluations. But that was genuinely quite rare. Felix suggested that in science you've only got one belief of how the world started, which is interesting because some scientists would suggest that the word belief isn't appropriate when talking about scientific theories. So, presented graphically, if we think about the extent of student knowledges of the Big Bang, we'd have to say that there was quite a variety, although particularly clustering at the low end of low knowledge. And if you think about the nature of conceptualization in terms of how canonical children's ideas were, again, there was quite a spread. Some children did have some vague, basic ideas about the nature of the Big Bang theory, but there were lots of ideas about the Big Bang occurring in existing space and being to do with the collision of particles or comets or whatever. If we ask the students what they think, their views again varied across the dimension. Some had accepted the Big Bang, some see it probable, some see it possible, some doubting it, and some outright rejecting it. This, of course, invites the question that does their position on whether the Big Bang actually does represent the creation of the universe relate to their understanding of what the Big Bang theory was? So we talked to Damien, for instance. He actually thought it was the Big Bang that accounted for the creation of the universe, although he accepted scientists haven't really got that much evidence as far as he knew. And he thought that the Big Bang involved two atoms colliding together. So here was somebody who was committed to the idea of the Big Bang, didn't really understand the evidential basis, and actually didn't really have a very good grounding in what the Big Bang was. Referred to planets still forming from atoms. Eamon in year 10 felt there were obviously flaws of the Big Bang theory and talked about science trying to weed the flaws out as you go along. Says you've got an infinite amount of energy and matter in an infinitely small point, which is the universe, because of a random event that suddenly expands to form the universe we know today. So a description of the Big Bang that is reasonable, but something he felt was flawed. And one of the major flaws he pointed out was the second law of thermodynamics. In his view, that showed the Big Bang couldn't be so. He told us he believed in the Bible, literally as God creating the earth in 6 days, resting on the seventh. So the whole universe came into being in a matter of a week. So Eamon had quite a good understanding of what the idea was, saw it as scientifically flawed, and rejected it. Donald in year 11 told us that personally I think that God created the universe and caused the Big Bang to happen, which then came and made the Earth. So God started it, although, Donald said, God didn't specifically intend to create the planets. Donald told us he thought that was more of a side effect. So unusual theology from Donald, that God deliberately created the universe we live in, but the planets were a kind of unexpected side effect. Donald thought that scientists were fairly certain about the Big Bang, but couldn't be fully certain, as there was no actual evidence. Nobody filmed it at the time. But thought that something like the Big Bang happening, and all the matter colliding and getting more things, seemed quite viable. Jessica told us that in her religion, which was Islam, did he believe that God created the universe and not the Big Bang theory. She thought the scientific idea was just that stuff was just created, you know, like that, you know. She told us that science is different to religion because science is like the Big Bang, and religion is something what you have to do, like towards or actions you do, and stuff like that. So she saw religion as being very different from science in nature, but also felt that belief in her religion excluded the scientific account. So in terms of commitment to the scientific idea, we again found quite a wide variety, from students who fully accepted the Big Bang and to students who completely rejected it. What about origins of the diversity of life on Earth? We found a similar pattern. Students generally had limited knowledge and understanding of evolution, but that didn't necessarily prevent them from adopting quite strong, committed views about whether or not they were going to accept evolution. Edward, when he was in year 8, told us he accepts evolution. He said, I believe we evolved from monkeys, and they evolved from mammals. And he says, I've watched enough TV shows and know enough to know they did evolve. They've proved that we evolved. It's been proven that evolution works. He told us the dinosaurs evolved from fish, and there were microorganisms evolved into the fish, and then half of them went onto land, and then they evolved into dinosaurs, mammals and all sorts. The monkey bit is interesting, he says, because half of them evolved into us, and the other ones evolved into gorillas and stuff. So a pattern of having a kind of vague idea of the evolutionary story, but perhaps with some of the details being a little bit missing and some of the details not being quite right. Finn told us he accepted evolution when we talked to him in year 10. So I believe the theory of evolution, it makes the most sense. Well, to me, because I've looked at all the evidence they've had, and yeah, like evolution happened over a certain amount of time. He believed it's like from the Big Bang, there were cells and things, and then slowly over millions of years they evolved into animals and then eventually into us. Asked about the evidence, fossils, like the different layers in the soil that you see in programmes. how they've evolved to live in the atmosphere we live in today. So Thin felt he knew about all the evidence, although what he could tell us was quite limited, quite vague. And his idea of evolution itself was, again, quite vague with very little detail. Freya, in Year 10, told us she accepts evolution. She said, the theory of evolution, although it's only a theory, we have to learn about it in school, so I think it's a fact. This idea that although she was told it was a theory, surely they wouldn't be teaching it in school unless we really knew it was true. And her idea of evolution was that science says after the Big Bang, we kind of evolved. Again, a very limited explanation. I am thinking Year 10 also accepts evolution. She says there was like a pool of bacteria and stuff like that. And they kind of grew and formed minor life forms, growing to form bigger things, and like humans came from apes. And there were dinosaurs a very, very long time ago, like before that. Something happened which wiped them off. Like we just evolved from things like to better suit our environment. So again, the gist of the idea of natural selection, but very little detail. She says we have proof there were dinosaurs, and that all of a sudden something happened, and there were no longer dinosaurs. We have proof of evolution, like with the bones of early humans, and we can see the development from like apes to humans. Ianthe also told us that dinosaurs were completely wiped off the Earth, and she thought someone said it's because there was a comet here, an asteroid or something hit the Earth, and there was no oxygen left. So she finds it odd, but she can see how it could be true. So again, here's somebody who accepts evolution, but actually has some scientific misconceptions about the evolutionary account. She says evolution happened. She thinks it's the one with the most evidence to support it. And she thinks the idea of there being somebody who started it all off is even more incomprehensible than the scientific view. So here's somebody who accepts evolution, but has misconceptions, limited understanding of the evidence, and really is saying that to her the evolutionary story is just a bit more viable, a bit more feasible than believing that some person of some kind created the universe. Ivy told us in Year 10 that she accepts evolution, definitely 100% believes in evolution and Darwin and everything. In terms of the evidence, she told us you can't ignore fossils and everything. People like Darwin kind of put them into place and said, oh look, this is how we've changed from when we were like, you know, tiny little organisms to now. She's saying the scientific idea she's guessing is dinosaurs, but before that we were tiny, tiny little things. And she guesses that scientists saw them on other planets as well, because you can see tiny little bits of life on other planets. So I guess, she said, you'd say that's how we started off. I guess that's how they'd explain it. So here's somebody who definitely 100% believes in evolution, but again only has a very vague idea of what the scientific account is, and includes the fact that scientists have found life on other planets. Eamon, when he was in Year 10, told us the generally accepted theory is evolution by natural selection, and that natural selection says that you have an organism and it changes in its genes, called mutations, and they give it extra characteristics or extra abilities. And if that helps it survive better than the previous organism, then it survives, and the previous one dies off or gets killed, etc., until you get really complex organisms like us today. In terms of scientific evidence, Eamon said there are numerous ways that we know about evolution, such as radiocarbon dating, which, he told us, involves measuring the levels of carbon-14, which is 6 protons and 8 neutrons, inside of living material. Because as far as it's measurable, the level of carbon-14 to regular carbon stays the same in the atmosphere, and because we breathe it in, stays the same in our body. However, when we die, we stop breathing it in, and the radioactive carbon-14 decays into nitrogen, he thinks. So you can measure how much carbon-14 is in a living organism, and therefore you'll find out the age or the relative age of the organism. So this is one of the more detailed explanations we had for some actual evidence for evolution. In his own view, Eamon thought he believed in the creation. The fish and the birds were created first, then the animals, then the humans. God created it like it says in the Bible, literally, 24 hours. Yeah. He thought the idea of God was more realistic than the scientific account, and that every reference in the Bible, apart from one, he thought was to the 24 hours being a day, and he thought it should be taken literally. So somebody who gave us the most detailed account of some of the evidence actually ignored the evidence and adopted a different frame of mind entirely. So what about Eamon's argument about the carbon dating? Eamon says you can combat certain arguments like this with, well, arguments that are in the Bible, such as when God created the earth, he made the expanse of water and had one below and one above, and in the middle was the sky. And if you did actually have a massive expanse of water above, he's not saying it's liquid water exactly, but it would stop the sun's radiation getting into the atmosphere, which actually creates the carbon-14 in the first place. So the levels will be different and the dating mechanism will be flawed. Now, any kind of post-positivist would say that any kind of evidence underdetermines a theory, and you can always find another explanation that fits with the evidence. Here we have Amon being quite clever, perhaps not thinking of this himself, but certainly presenting an argument for why a scientific piece of evidence he understood quite well may actually be misleading because of something it says in the Bible. We found Jasmine in year 7 told us about evolution, and then again in year 8 told us about evolution, and her idea didn't seem to have developed very much. Yet when we asked her in year 7, she said that she thought we've all evolved from cavemen and everything. And a year later, she'd come to believe the religious way that God created all and everything. Unfortunately, we don't really know what it was that made her change her mind. It didn't seem to be her understanding of evolution. So we found that nearly all the students knew about evolution. Most, however, could only offer us rather vague accounts. They generally had some awareness of the role of fossils or other evidence, and often they had some alternative conceptions, or at least some very vague ideas about how evolution worked. But it seems the level of commitment to accepting or rejecting evolution wasn't clearly linked to the degree of knowledge and understanding. We can summarise our findings in terms of thinking about these two simple graphs. If we consider the extent to which students accept or reject evolution or the Big Bang in terms of the extent of their knowledge, we find that there are students who have a good understanding of the science and accept it, students who have a poor understanding of the science and reject it. But it's also quite possible to have a good understanding of the science and reject it, or accept the science based on a very poor understanding. The same goes in terms of whether there's an accuracy in their understanding, that some students who accepted the science had quite a good understanding of the theories, some who rejected the science had misconceptions, but there are also students who didn't seem to have misconceptions yet rejected the science, and students who did have misconceptions and accepted their misconceived view of the science. What does this tell us? Well, we know that there are different levels of commitment to ideas that students come across in science, and that students can have multiple alternative conceptions. We know that understanding a scientific idea is not an assurance of accepting it, or later recalling it and applying it. Research reports ignore the complexity of cognitive ecologies are not going to tell us enough, because it's a very holistic and sophisticated approach that's needed to get to the bottom of what students really think and how what they learn and understand affects their degree of accepting of scientific ideas. The conclusion we draw from this is that knowing and understanding science and supporting evidence doesn't mean students will be committed enough to commit to the science. And that knowing almost nothing about a scientific idea and the evidence base, or having misconceptions about the science, doesn't actually prevent students from committing to the science. So when an idea is taught with the authority of science, some students may completely misunderstand it, have very vague ideas about it, but yet accept it. I would suggest we should be concerned on both counts. Thank you very much.